Welcome to the 20th SNI and SNI Digital Baghdad Neurosurgery Online Meeting, November 26, 2023. The meeting originator and coordinator is Samer Haz, University of Baghdad and Pittsburgh. Next speaker is Dr. Wamith E. Mati. He is speaking on neuro-oncology through complex cases.
And now, we want to invite Dr. Wamith Assam Mati. His father is the Dr. Assam Mati, the well-known radiologist, one of the founder of radiology in Iraq. And he's very radiology-oriented neurosurgeon and based in Iraq and now working on Al Saad Al Wutri, a neuroscience teaching hospital. And he will share his presentation about neuro-oncology cases. Dr. Wamir is a well-known teacher for young residents all over his years since he's resident. And usually we expect that complex cases end with Dr. Wamir. That's his reputation. It's good and bad at the same time. Based on his experience, we are honored to have him here and to share his experience. The stage is yours, Dr. Wamir.
Thank you, Samer. I'm honored to be here once again. Thank you for having me. Today, I will talk about neuro-oncology through complex cases. I'm going to share two cases of neuro-oncology. Our first case is a 36-year-old female that presented unconscious to the ER in one of the southern governorates of Iraq, where they did a brain CT scan to her on the 3rd of July, 2023. This is the brain CT scan. And as you can see, there is a colloid cyst in the third ventricle with hydrocephalus, or what we call a biventricular hydrocephalus, because of the obstruction of the two foramina of Monroe. And there is effacement of the sulci. This is the sagittal and coronal reconstruction of the axial images. And we can see it is in the third ventricle. So it's a typical case of a hyperdense colloid cyst with hydrocephalus. The neurosurgeon on call decided to do an external ventricular drain. Here is the post-op imaging. This is the post-op CT scan. We can see the frontal extraventricular drain, external ventricular drain here in the frontal horn. Which will only decompress one of the ventricles, while the other ventricle will remain and not decompress because of the obstruction of the foramina of Monroe. The patient regained her consciousness, but what happened after that? The patient was kept on external ventricular drain for 12 days till 16th of July 2023, when the neurosurgeon has decided to do biventricular shunts, bilateral VP shunts. We can see there are two ventricular shunts in the frontal horn. He used the Kocher point. And this is the 3D reconstruction. We can see there are two shunts that are connected by a Y connector and one peritoneal shunt. If we look closely to the shunt, we can see here a fixed medium pressure that is available in his hospital. It is not a high pressure shunt. So after that, the patient was shunted. The tumor is still there. On the 24th of July, the patient presented with signs of overshunting. We can see here, there is a tension pneumocephalus with subdural effusion, and he has done a borehole evacuation to try to treat the signs of overshunting, which created more air inside the brain. The patient lost her consciousness and then transferred to another hospital in Baghdad, admitted to the ICU on the 20th of July. This is the brain CT scan that was done, and the patient continued to deteriorate. When one of my colleagues, he called me and asked what we are going to do. The Glasgow Coma Scale score is 6. So he asked me to take over the case. Now it's difficult to decide what to do now, because there are many things on the stake. We have overshunting, we have two bilateral shunts, and the tumor is still there. Let's look at the case. We have two linear incisions for the Kocher points for the shunts, and this is the borehole that has been done to evacuate the tension pneumocephalus. It is down in the temporal region. So we decided to do a flap by connecting these two linear incisions to go interhemispheric transcalusal to resect the colloid cyst. And at the same time, at the beginning, we have to remove the shunts to end the overshunting. So this is an intraoperative images of the cases. Here we can see the brain is collapsed. It fall away from the dura and from the falx. Dissecting the interhemispheric fissure, we can find the callosal marginal arteries with the inferior sagittal sinus, then going inferiorly till the corpus callosum. And this is the callosal incision. Here we use the brain retractor just to know the length of our incision. This is the colloid cyst through the foramen of Monroe. Then after evacuating its content, we can resect the wall. And this is the bed of the colloid cyst after resection. So the patient was extubated once emerged from anesthesia and admitted to the ICU. In the day zero, her Glasgow Coma Scale score was raised to 10. And we did a brain CT scan. And day zero, let's took a closer look to that. Here we can see the colloid cyst is totally resected and we have removed the shunts. Let's see that this is the bone flap. And here is a 3D reconstruction. We didn't use the Kocher points as they were away from the intended craniotomy. We can see the craniotomy is 2/3 anterior to the coronal suture, 1/3 posterior to the coronal suture. And we elected to cross the midline with that craniotomy because we didn't know if we are able to visualize the ventricle clearly because of the midline shift and the cingulate gyrus herniation, the subfalcian herniation. So we elected to cross the midline to use both of the interhemispheric fissures, both sides of the interhemispheric fissure. The patient on the 2nd of August is conscious, but she was aphasic, unable to stand alone, and she has no papilledema edema. When we do a brain MRI for her after 1 week of the surgery, we can see the axial T1, the sagittal and coronal T2. Here, the stelci are opened. There's no raised ICP, so there is no need for the shunt, for a permanent shunt, as we can see in the axial T2. But in the flare, we can see a lot of things are happening in the thalamus and hypothalamus, a lot of edema there. On the 1st of November, in her last visit, she can walk with assistant, talks, but not fluent. This is the patient on the 1st of November, 2023. So we have a lot of questions. What was the right course of treatment for such an emergency? I think doing an EVD, then transcalosal approach for colloid resection. Well, if it was an elective case, the patient is conscious, we can do an endoscopic resection. A lot of learning points we will talk about. We're sure we are going to discuss that, about permanent shunting, the choice of shunt pressure, and the shunt flaps, over shunting, and how to treat tension pneumocephalus. Our second case is a 53-year-old female who presented with two seizures in 1 week. A brain CT scan was done for her and diagnosed as a brain abscess. She underwent surgery in the form of a craniotomy on the 20th of September, 2022. This is the CT scan. I have only the post-op. I don't have the pre-op. So we are looking at the CT scan. This is the brain window. We can see here the evidence of craniotomy. and there is edema in the temporal parietal lobes with compression to the ipsilateral right lateral ventricle and the midline shift. This is the post-op CT scan. And this is the bone window. And we can see there is a drain. The histopathology was fragments of 1.5 cm, revealed wall of a brain abscess. There is no granuloma, no malignancy. And the aspirate was a debris of inflammatory cells. So it was a case of a brain abscess at that time of 20th of September 2022. The patient was kept on antibiotics and antiepileptics. But on the follow-up brain CT scan on the 15th of November, the patient was still having edema, compression to the ventricle, and a midline shift. So they did the MRI, and the MRI revealed there are ring-enhancing lesions in the site of surgery. We can see here there are multinodularity, and another one in the occipital lobe, more posterior to the first lesion. But these lesions were not restricted in the, this is the Dewey, it was not restricted in the B1000. And in the T2, we can see there are multiple hypodensities inside it, not expected for such a brain abscess. And the edema is reaching away into the temporal pole. Another, there is ankle herniation in there. So the neurosurgeon decided to go for another craniotomy 1 week after this imaging, and he done the same through the same flap. We can see here there is a resection cavity, but still there is edema in the brain CT scan in the bone window. Here, this is the flap. It is slightly raised, and again, they placed a drain. But the histopathology at this time revealed that there is a meningioma, a transitional grade 1, low grade, according to the Ki-67, there is 2.5% proliferation index. The patient was kept on antibiotics and antiepileptics again. But in the follow-up brain MRI with contrast, which was done on 29th of March 2023, here we can see there is still a mass that is large. It is not so hyper intense in T2. It has some iso intensity. And in the flare sequence, there is little restriction in the B1000 and the post contrast showing a ring enhancing lesion. And we can't see the second lesion, I think it is one lesion now. So one of my colleagues, he called me and asked me what to do next and asked me to take over the case. So we decided to remove the bone, the dura, aspirate from the lesion and excise it with the aid of intraoperative ultrasound on the 4th of April, 2023. This is the intraoperative ultrasound. We use it to localize the lesion, and here is the abscess. We can see here, this is a video of the aspiration. This is the brain needle going inside the abscess. We can do aspiration guided by the ultrasound. And here we can see the pus. And then we resected the lesion. The lesion was, as you see, fleshy, nodular, there's no smooth regions. This mass was first done by debulking, then resection. So a post-op brain CT scan we do on the day zero, 5th of April. This is the post-op brain CT scan, the brain window. We can see here the compression on the ipsilateral ventricle decreased and the midline shift decreased, the edema decreased in size, and the histopathology revealed a malignant meningioma, a papillary variant, which is WHO grade 3, which is a shock for us. The aspirate from the pus revealed staph epidermidis, which is resistant to so many antibiotics, but luckily are sensitive to others. And the bone flab and the dura that were removed were having a Pseudomonas infection. We did a follow-up brain MRI 3 weeks later. This is the MRI. This is the T2 axial sections. We can see there the ventricle returned to a normal size. There is no more compression, no midline shift. And this is the flare, the edema, so much the not reaching down to the temporal pole. This is the Dewey, the B1000. There is no more restriction. And this is the post-gadolinium T1 contrast. We can see no enhancement in the site of the surgery. So the patient was referred to the oncology. The radiotherapist started VMAT with IGRT. They give her a total dose of 59.4 gray and 33 fractions of 1.8 dose per fraction. The patient was doing well. There was no seizures, no signs of raised ICP. But the radiotherapist called me and told we discussed the case, and we elected to do a PET CT scan as it is a malignant meningioma to rule out metastasis outside of the cranial cavity. And to our shock, we scheduled a PET CT scan on the 19th of July, 2023. And there was good for us, no evidence of residual or recurrent disease, but there was multiple lymph nodes in the mediastinum and hilar, which was suggested to be infective more than neoplastic. This is the brain, this is the PET CT scan. And this is the lymph node, the hilar lymph nodes, and this is the pancreatic one. And they decided to do a follow-up. Before the follow-up, we did a cranioplasty with titanium mesh on the 19th of September, 2023. Then the follow-up was on the 2nd of November, 2023, which showed there is a metabolically active right supraclavicular, paratracheal, and left prebronchial, left hilar, and abdominal lymph node lesions that were increased in size and number and FDG avidity in comparison to the last PET CT scan. And there is no evidence of residual or recurrent disease in the brain. So they decided to go to biopsy from the hilar lymph nodes, which was done earlier this month. And the lymph node biopsy was compatible with a metastatic malignant meningioma to the hilar lymph nodes. So now the oncologist is doing an MDT about this case, and they are considering to go for a targeted therapy with bevacizumab and everolimus. Sometimes the difficulty in these cases is how to do a decision rather than the surgery itself. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Omid Asamati, for this nice presentation. I really expect the audience also has some questions and discussion about that. Obviously, really complex cases. And thank you for being with the limited time so we can give time now
yes.
to questions and answers. I really appreciate those two presentations.
In the case of Dr. Demati, I have two of the questions pertinent to this issue regarding to his first patient, or that the first patient he had presented, no? Because he inherited that patient from another doctor, is fine. You have the patient with a benign colloid cyst in the third ventricle, right? With hydrocephalus. If the shunts, both shunts would have worked fine, would have you done anything?
To start with, you know that as we discussed, colloid cyst is a benign tumor. If you resect it, there's no need for any adjuvant therapy. And it is the best approach not to place shunts. You know that shunts are not without complications. special infection. Whenever you increase the number of shunts, you are going to have complications sooner or later.
No, so I agree with
even
you.
Even if the shunts were functioning, I would remove them.
And so if the shunts were working, perhaps your colleague would not have asked you for the question. If the patient was fine, then the patient would never have had the removal of the cyst. I fully agree with you that the removal of the cyst is the treatment, yes, of choice, and then also it is possible endoscopically. Yep. There's no question about it. What I'm generally saying is that the level of that the discussion that you proposed in your presentation was what to do, but what to do in the first time. No, I fully agree with you that you approach the thing correctly. No, I am also asking those questions for the benefit of the youngsters who are here. No, so you said exactly the removal of the cyst was the right thing to do, and never put a shunt in those situations. Why do you think that the patient has an aphasia after the removal of the cyst?
Because it was unconscious for a long time. She was unconscious for about 3 weeks.
I missed that part. So she was unconscious between 3 weeks after the placement of the shunt and
because of the overshunting, and there was subdural effusion, subdural hematomas, then the tension pneumocephalus kicked in. So there were many things going inside her brain.
The thalamic lesion is not related to that. I mean, no, I don't think so.
I think it's one of the theories that explained the sudden death in colloid cyst is having a compression on the thalamus and the hypothalamus and the arrhythmias that it caused. That's why we are seeing that in the MRI. The patient had never done MRI prior to the surgery. It was done only after the surgery. We did it to ensure that there is no subdural effusions, there is no need, there is no hydrocephalus, and there is no need for shunting. And for sure, not to do so many brain CT scans. Whenever we can do an MRI, it's better than giving radiation to the patient.
Perfect. So you're at the teaching point for our audience, for the young audience, not for Dr. Hausmann or Dr. Oso, or all the other ones who know the issue. Is colloid cyst, don't shunt, remove the cyst, and the consequences of not doing it properly are impairing the quality of life of the patient. Has she improved? Well, she had surgeries.
Yes. Yes, and her last visit, she was able to talk. She can sit alone and only walk with assistance.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Dr. Osman, you had to raise your hand?
Yeah, a number of questions there. Dr. Mahdi, first of all, I always enjoy your talks. You do a very good job, and you ask some very good fundamental human questions all the time. And I have a high regard for what you do. And these are two cases. I think we have to put it in the perspective here. You're receiving these patients after they have been treated elsewhere. And so you're seeing patients that have complications. If they didn't have complications, you wouldn't see them. Yes. I think there's a message there. I'll come to that. So in the colloid cyst, it's perfectly understandable. I can understand a person who may not be familiar with it or may not have the equipment or the assistance to put bilateral shunts in somebody who looks like they have a colloid cyst. That's been done for years. And in this case, it didn't work. Or for whatever reason, it didn't work and had the incredible complications which happened. And then you saw the patient and everything you did was, I thought, was very, very reasonable. It gets me to something I'm going to tell you about in the second case. The case with the brain abscess, again, a common thing that people would see, they treat. Maybe some people would treat it more aggressively first time than others. There could be difference of approaches, but you received the case after it became very complicated and found that there was a malignant tumor associated with a meningioma and did everything that was reasonable that you could to take care of that. So you're dealing with it. a disease that had appeared simple initially, but actually turned out to be very complex and now is multiply metastatic. So it gets me to, and again, I think what you've done technically, your thinking processes, the question you ask are superb, absolutely superb. And I couldn't ask a second question about anything you did. When you get to that point, anything you do that makes sense. But what it does do to me is it points out issues that are important in low to middle income countries and high income countries. And can be solved in Iraq with modern technology if people don't spend their money on war. And that is television communication between centers like yours and those in other hospitals and other areas in the country, where you can pick up these cases, where people can have conferences like we had televised in the past five series of conferences where people can bring their cases and discuss things and make them feel comfortable talking and consulting to other people and not make them feel terrified that people are going to criticize them. I think this is a mindset that we have to introduce, and it's true all over the world. It's true in our country, and this is a high-income country. People need to be able to be honest and say, I have a problem, I need some help, I need some consultation, and you can give them that consultation. That may have helped you in these cases. And so it also points up to the fact that it's important to have conferences where people can feel free to talk to people like we're doing here. And if you can feel uninhibited to refer a case and not be criticized by the doctor who receives a case. I haven't heard you say a critical comment about any case you've received. My compliments to you. So I think there are multiple messages that come out of this. In the first case from public health, and in the second case, what can you do with the limited resources you have to bring the best quality of medicine to the most people in Iraq for the least cost? And I think that's the same problem we have in our country, although people don't want to recognize it. They think we spend more money and then we'll get the better result. That's not true. So I think that everybody in the world has this problem to deal with. There are no unlimited resources for healthcare. It is not unlimited. We have to feed people. We have to clothe people. We have to get them jobs. These are things that are very important. And in neurosurgery and in medicine, we have to find simple, reasonable treatments and ways of treating people. We've got to prevent drug companies from basically stealing health from patients. They ought to be persecuted as criminals. And the same here is we ought to be able to reuse these resources so we can bring your talents to people all over Iraq and make them feel comfortable. They can call you earlier. You have a chance to look at these diseases. You're an extremely talented neurosurgeon who's done an outstanding job. I've gone over your videos many times. And obviously you have talented people in Iraq. You have talented people in many countries. We have to use them. We have to get them all used properly. We have to use our resources properly. That's what I got out of this. And I hope the students get the message, because if you don't go into neurosurgery, and probably a fraction of this audience will, you can go into public health, you can go into medicine, you can go into other specialties, but these are things you've got to keep in your mind. That's why you go into medicine. I'm here to help patients. That's my primary goal. My goal is to be the best I can for the patients. Treat them as they are your family. Do the best you can for them. And if something stands in the way, you got to stand up and you got to say, that's not right. Thank you very much.
Jim, you were talking about the limited resources. Professor Ari in Slimania, he's with us now. He remembers that in the time of sanction, we used to take the blocked shunt and we clear it, we clean it, we re-sterilize it, and then we put it back again because we didn't have shunts at all at that time. And you leave your patient to die from progressive hydrocephalus, or you do something which you don't believe in, but you have to do it. And the limited resources which we had during the sanction was beyond imagination. So many operation lists were lists. were canceled because we don't have oxygen. That's where possibly this will be in some of the limited resources countries now. We don't know. You remember, Ari?
I totally agree.
Do we yes, sir, of course. Yes, sir.
Do we need more missiles or do we need more medical care?
Yeah. I hope the decision makers will listen to your statements, Jim.
Well, I'm sure the students are listening because their hearts are right in this and thinking about this. And when you grow up this and get more influence in the medicine, that's where you ought to be.
Yeah.
Not where pharmaceutical companies or business people or even doctors who want to make money are injuring the individual patient. That's unacceptable. It's yeah. unacceptable.
Yeah. Many surgical procedures done now unnecessarily. Many investigations, including radiology, MRI, and others, and catheterization, many of them are unnecessarily done for the sake of money everywhere.
Yeah. Dr. Mahdi, you are not in that category. You no. are a very compassionate, thoughtful, considerate, skilled human being and neurosurgeon.
Thank you, sir.
Good representative of his late father.
Thank you.
So I guess if there are no more questions pending, we understand yeah. As at the summary, I will say for the people that the two lessons, one expressed dramatically and enthusiastically and emphatically by Dr. Osman, we all agree with that. And my personal thing again to Dr. Mahdi, and in which he did not mention or did not criticize his colleagues, and he was open to share the many complications that aroused from the patient. We all have complications. The neurosurgeon or the surgeon who says that never had any complications or has very few complications, either is not doing surgery or is lying, you know? And the complications, that's the unfortunate things of the textbooks. The textbooks gives you that impression that everything is pristine, from A to B to B to C, C, D, no? Diagnosis, treatment, outcome. And this is not how life it is, no? That's why we have the training. And I sincerely hope, and I know that the many young people who are listening, are learning from both of you, from Dr. Khalili and his experience, and from Dr. Mahdi and his attitude, no? And we keep Dr. Osman's message to the heart as well, no? And if anybody has any other questions, we will close this issue, if you agree, Samer.
Can I make some comments?
Please. Go ahead.
From the many things that we teach to our residents, the first of which is being a safe surgeon. Don't risk the life of your patient. And it's okay to ask for help. We all of us want to help you. Even if you are far away from us, we have rushed into another governorate to do the surgery. So it's a privilege to do that. This is one. Number two, it's less painful to learn from other faults. So when we are sharing them, it's for teaching purposes, it's for them to learn. And as we say, neurosurgery is all about complications. And when you become more expert, you know how to deal with them. And when you are more expert, you know how to avoid them. This is the complication avoidance.
Mm-hmm. In fact, yes. It's been known that the rear surgeon is the one who decided not to operate, was able to decide not to operate. And the surgeon has his knife in his pocket better than the, not necessarily better, but safer than the surgeon who puts his knife in his hand.
That's absolutely right, Hadi. And Dr. Mahdi raised a question at one of our last meetings. We didn't answer it, but he said if somebody comes in and they have a left dominant hemisphere stroke, middle cerebral artery occlusion, and they have massive edema and they're aphasic and hemiplegic. What should I do? What should I do? As a surgeon, as a technician, which you're not, you're a surgeon, you're a physician. As a technician, you can all do a lot of things. You can operate, you can do this, that, and the next thing. The question is, what should be done? What is the humane thing to do? And that was the question he was asking. And that comes from a doctor with soul.
Any question or comment from presenters, final thoughts, final comments for the closing remarks? No one? Okay. So I just want to let you all that the recording of this meeting will go first through editing, then a peer review, and then will be available at the SNI Digital, hopefully as soon as possible. And we will share also the recording with you for those who want to share it, and also for those who want to attend the presentation again. And thank you, everybody, for being here. It's an honor to listen to all those experiences.
I'd like to ask one thing. I wish everybody here would send their comments. We can't do better. I left the operating room, asked everybody, what could we do better? And that's what we need to ask here. What can we do better to teach you better, to help you better, to help the patients better? And send the comments to Sam. That would be immensely helpful. We've spent a lot of time and effort trying to bring this to you. We want to know if it's worthwhile. If it's not worthwhile, what can we do better? We want your suggestions. And I thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Professor. Thank you all. Thank you for everybody. Thank you for your time. And yeah, see you again in the next meeting. And have a great day. Have a great time. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Great time. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye to all. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hey, bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy these presentations. The information provided in this program is for informational purposes and is not intended for use as diagnosis or treatment of a health problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical profession. Please fill out your evaluation of this video to attain CME credit. This recorded session is available free on snidigital.org. Send your questions or comments to ausman@snidigital.org. This program has been supported by the James I. and Carolyn R. Ausman Educational Foundation, owner of SNI and SNI Digital, and the Waymaster Corporation, producers of the Leading Gen television series, Silent Majority Speaks and Role Models, and the new Medical News Network. Thank you.